All alone and feeling blue.
Booker, are you afraid of God?
No. But I'm afraid of you.
So welcome to IGR's inaugural podcast. We're going to be covering the topics from our industry impact article. We collected the five biggest news stories from this week. We gave them a collective rating. It was actually a bigger news week this week. So we gave it a rating of impressive. At least I did. My cohorts here, I have Dale, who is going to be doing some late to the party reviews. He doesn't get around to playing games as often as the rest of us losers, so he'll be reviewing some games that are a little bit older. You want to say hi, Dale?
Hi, losers.
Also have Scott. He is our PC elitist of the group, doing some of our video reviews, things like that.
Hello.
And then we have Dan, who has no connection to this website whatsoever. He was just asked to come here and help out tonight. And he does play some video games, mostly a lot of the stuff online with like WoW and MMOs and stuff like that.
Hello.
So we have five topics, as previously mentioned. We're going to start with just giving you the topics collectively here that we'll be covering. We have the Battlefield 4 reveal. We have a Metal Gear Solid 5 reveal, as well as the resignation of the Square Enix CEO, Yoichi Wada. And we also have the Activision Game Developers Conference tech demo and the BioShock Infinite release after about 5 years of development. So those are our five topics. We'll go ahead and just start our roundtable discussion with the Battlefield 4 reveal. As far as the reveal goes, it started off with like really good momentum, in my opinion. They did some things very, very well. They teased some new gameplay mechanics, things like that, that a lot of people were excited to see. And they did a good job marketing the reveal, letting people know that they had set a specific date for it, which was just this past week on the 27th. Then they kind of actually, it seemed like they stumbled a little bit when they actually went through and did the demo of the game.
That was always my big thing, is you're going to show all these interesting gameplay changes or these new things that are going to, as they like to say, revolutionize the first person shooter, and then they show you 17 minutes of walking through halls and what looks like Battlefield 3 gameplay. Nothing. They didn't really exploit some of the new mechanics. Yeah, they showed the marking so that you can, you know, sort of get your guys to lay suppressing fire and get around and shoot them in the back, but they didn't really demonstrate how that changes much of anything.
Suppressive fire was in Battlefield 3 as well.
So yeah, and they've been doing like that for years in different games. Yeah. It's not revolutionizing anything. It's just more of the same, and they need something to differentiate themselves from the rest of the FPS world.
Well, that, and it's largely a multiplayer game, and they started out in single player in the storyline. I think that was their the biggest.
The storyline has never been the strong suit of those military shooters.
I've played every single Battlefield game, and I think I've finished the story maybe once. It's always multiplayer, and then I think that was the biggest thing for me, was the fact that they didn't show the gameplay for multiplayer.
Well, and not just the fact that they showed all single player footage, but the media outlets that were present during that reveal said that the presenters were really stoic and uninspired and just kind of repeating the different things that the pre-video package had reiterated, like like Scott mentioned, they're trying to revolutionize the first-person shooter market. And I think we're at an unfortunate point with that genre as a whole, because it's kind of the only thing that you can do at this point is, you know, improve upon graphics. There's not really that many gameplay mechanics that are, you know, out there available to be introduced. Maybe if somebody went off the wall and did something that nobody's ever thought of, it might work, or it might just be a laughing stock.
Yeah, they tried that. It was called Battlefield 2142, and it sucked.
Well, there's that, and then there's shooters like Bulletstorm. People that try to do things with, like, you know, heavily emphasizing melee, which, I mean, it was fun. I played the demo of it. I never actually got into the full game release, but, you know, kicking a guy onto a bed of spikes over and over again instead of shooting him is just a gimmick.
But I got to give them credit for at least trying to do something different. It seems like Battlefield is trying to make themselves Call of Duty's replacement. And people are invested in the Call of Duty system. You can make one that's good and much like it, but I think, and maybe sales don't bear this out, but games like Brothers in Arms, where it was all about the suppressive fire and you could destroy cover, and you would, you know, that was the whole mechanic, that was the conceit of the game, was the cover system and the suppressive fire. At least that was different. It wasn't just Call of Duty with, oh, hey, we have a couple other little things, like watch us mark some targets and go around a corner.
Battlefield's strength to differentiate itself has always been the vehicular combat. The addition of tanks and jeeps and jets, helicopters, that type of stuff. With one of their teaser trailers, they showed a propeller starting underwater, which implies some sort of underwater naval combat of some kind. They haven't elaborated on it by any means, so nobody knows if that's an actual mechanic that's going to be built into the game or if that was just something to, you know, get the rumor mill churning.
Well, on the PC side, the 64 player multiplayer is also fairly unique, at least compared to Call of Duty. And 32 on 32, you have very different styles of play than you would 8 on 8. There's no such thing as camping when there's 32 other people trying to kill you and throwing grenades everywhere. So it does change how the game plays in multiplayer. And to not even show any of that and their strength is kind of a fumble.
I don't know how I don't see the naval warfare working out as much as they planned. Can you imagine just being in a submarine? How slow and like slow paced that's going to be? Like, okay, I'm going to turn my sub now, and I'm turning. Okay, I'm going to fire at, unless they do some way to, like, maybe you can like launch a missile or something, you know, that you can do with a sub, but
there's a market out there for everything. We've got full-on submarine warfare simulators that at least a few people bought, so somebody's, maybe they're just trying to appeal to as large an audience as possible.
Maybe they're just
possible.
Trying to grab as many people as they can.
Yeah. Or it's a core mechanic that's going to help to differentiate. It's going to be the first first-person shooter that offers naval combat.
Then they should have shown more of it. Yeah, that would have gotten people talking. Absolutely. Just,
instead of a propeller starter, maybe they just wanted to show the water graphics.
Yeah, we're extrapolating.
Yeah, they showed tank treads in the other one. Mm. They showed tank treads in the first teaser, a propeller starting the second. So, I mean, assumptions are never the best thing to go with, but, you know, the tank is a huge part of the Battlefield gameplay. So, you know, if they're going to show tank treads in the same light as they are a propeller starting in a, what was it, about 8 second teaser trailer, then it, you know, it's giving people hope that type of thing will be implemented in the game. Now, what I want to know is basically, do you guys think that their reveal was successful? Do you think that it was a huge misstep? What do you guys think?
The game's got enough backing. I don't think anything they could have done would have destroyed it or really help it anymore. I think it's got enough following where basically, I mean, they could have come out there in their pajamas. So, all right, guys, here's the game. Peace.
They're playing it pretty safe.
Yeah.
But I don't really see anything that just says, I have to buy this game.
Yeah.
And that's what I want out of 17 minutes of footage.
Yeah, they're still releasing content for Battlefield 3.
They did. Just two weeks ago.
Yeah, it's... I'll still probably get it and play it, but it's nothing really saying, boy, you really need to get this over Battlefield 3. Because although the destruction environment, the little bit that I watched where the guy, where he took the grenade launcher and then he destroyed the area of the building and then he shot him, I thought that was cool. I don't really remember doing any of that in Battlefield 3. And like when I've been getting camped by like a sniper or something behind cover, you can lob a grenade and hopefully dies. But now you can lob a grenade, destroy his cover, and then shoot him, which... I think that's not really game-changing, but it's...
As long as that works in multiplayer, too.
Yeah.
That's something they could easily pair back in multiplayer for graphical reasons, for, you know, time, just being able to get it to run properly.
Yeah.
That's a lot of calculating to do when 64 players are blowing up walls at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely. It seemed like in a Bad Company 2. There was that element, but the multiplayer space, I mean, it took forever to bring a building down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It took forever just blasting it with a tank or, you know, any type of
artillery. Same thing in Battlefield 3, man. You just try to take a tree out, and it takes until your gun overheats to take a tree out.
Yeah. So, I guess, you know, if you're going to offer it, then try to make it as large of a mechanic as possible rather than offering it to the minimal specs. Mm-hmm. Overall, I think, you know, they did a really good job of creating the momentum that they wanted and the anticipation for the reveal, and then they misstepped big time with the actual reveal.
They've got time, you know, there's there's more to reveal. And they'll get the multiplayer stuff out, and that's, you know, probably the last thing they're going to develop.
But if you're gonna send out invitations,
yeah,
and have people show up at a movie theater to watch this thing, you don't want to have any missteps.
Yeah,
it's like a bad movie premiere, basically. Then we also saw the Phantom Pain and. Metal Gear Solid Ground Zeroes. They finally got intermingled this week when Hideo Kojima pretty much said that they were one and the same here at GDC. He showed up to one of his panels wrapped in bandages like we had seen in the Phantom Pain previews. That little bit of theatricality did do quite a bit to cause a stir at the GDC conference.
That wasn't. He was just trying to start a new fashion trend. I don't think
it's well, it would, you know, depending on what you look like, it could work out. It could work out in your favor.
There's a lot of lepers out there that are just hoping it takes off.
But you know, basically, we have the reveal of a large game and in a franchise that's created a huge following over multiple consoles. I don't know. How do you guys think that it all went over? I mean, we've seen the reveal trailer. We've also seen 5 minutes of gameplay.
I think it was like exact opposite of Battlefield, where you had the over the top, you know, with him coming in the bandages, and then you watched a guy crawling for 5 minutes, and that totally
As if you haven't watched the gameplay footage for this game, you need to YouTube it and watch it for you. Watch the whole thing. Grab a bucket of popcorn. Sit down for 5 minutes and enjoy.
You're okay with losing 5 minutes.
You will be feeling the phantom pain.
It's, I mean, like you said, Dylan, maybe it's just showing the new engine or ragdoll, but you could have done that in 30 seconds. Like,
yeah.
5 minutes, that's really...
Yeah, an explosion, somebody flying through the air and landing in a horrible fashion would have showed...
That would have done it for me.
Would have showed the new ragdoll engine. I mean, there's huge things that games are doing with their physics engines nowadays. Like, I was really, really impressed with Max Payne 3. But Max Payne 3 was super impressive because this guy is, like, aging. And he's not as spry as he used to be. So if you go into bullet time and you dodge, you know, 5 bullets and you ram your face into a concrete wall, the game rams his face into a concrete wall and he falls down and he's just about as dead as he would have been if he would have taken those bullets. So, you know, that the use of that type of game engine is something that helps to create a more realistic environment in video games.
But there you're talking about something that actually affected the gameplay. Don't jump at walls. Common sense. Watching a guy crawl around and, oh boy, his arm sure dangles quite realistic.
Because he has a hook cam.
He certainly does.
Yeah, I mean, the gameplay to me was probably about the worst thing they possibly could have done. To try to get, you know, people to want to go out and buy this game for $60 the day it comes out, the worst thing you can do is show somebody crawling across a floor on, you know, with one hand because the other hand is a hook, and just not doing anything. I, you know, there's a guy walking around in front of him. Telling him where to go. At one point, he gets up on a couch. I thought he was going to lay down and take a nap. It was
not to mention they passed up a perfectly good wheelchair.
Yeah, exactly. It was I have no idea what marketing team went out there and said, okay, let's you know, do this for our, you know, gameplay reveal.
Right. But in Hideo's defense, how many of us are would consider ourselves Metal Gear Solid fans? I would say none of us.
I think none of us are
we're
huge
not the
fans.
Target audience. There's a certain
paraplegics?
Yes, that's the group he's going for. there's a group of people that just sap the, I mean, I've played at least through 4. And I have no idea what Metal Gear Solid is about. I know there's a guy named Big Boss and some snakes being eaten. Honestly, I have no idea what this story is about. So they're not going to show an interesting story. That's not what makes people play this game. It's,
right. The story is set already. You know, if you're a fan of the series, you know where you're at, basically.
There's got to be an audience for it. It still sells.
Right. The audience is built in. It doesn't matter what the f*** they show. Because the people that bought... They went out and they bought Metal Gear Rising Revengeance. Tons of people went out and bought that game. And it was, you know, we have an Xbox reviewer. His name is Nick. He reviewed the game. He gave it, I believe, an 8 out of 10. But as far as I've heard, it's a hack and slash, and it's a right analog stick hack and slash. So there's no real combination to it. There's no rhyme or reason why they went out and they said we're gonna make a hack and slash out of Metal Gear Solid, and it's still sold.
I'm waiting for the Metal Gear Solid kart racing game.
Right. Yep, they have plenty. They have fertile ground to explore the kart racing with Metal Gear Solid. So, what do you think? Was it successful? Do you think it nabbed the audience that it wanted to nab, or what do you?
I'm pretty sure I heard people laughing at the gameplay footage, which I don't think is a good sign. But maybe they were just trying to show one particular aspect, and they're saving the rest for later. I don't think they can do anything to get me that interested in the game, but. Again, I'm not their target audience, so I can't really say it didn't work for people who are already interested in it.
Sure.
Whereas with Battlefield, we were saying, I'm actually interested in that, and it didn't work for me. It's hard to judge when none of us are really that into it.
Yeah.
Tune with it anyway.
But isn't the point of a reveal or actually any video game out there to sell the most copies that they possibly can?
To grab a new audience.
Can you possibly try to get people that aren't into the series into the series by showing them somebody crawling across a hospital floor for 5 minutes and then that's it?
You make a good point there, but there's also a world where we can have very specific target audiences. I don't want my next Forza game to also have kart elements, to also have, you know, elements that would bring in other people. I want my hardcore racing game that's really hard and follows the physics of real world, bar none.
What I'm thinking with the reveal is I think they did what they wanted to do. The target audience that Metal Gear Solid has cultivated over the last, 10 plus years?
Yeah, this game's been around for a while.
Right, they've been around for a while, and a big part of those games is patience. And it's painstaking memorization of enemy movements and things like that.
But that's a genre that's dying. If you look at the newest Splinter Cells, I'm a huge fan of the original Splinter Cell series on Xbox, where it was memorization, don't kill anyone, sneak around. I beat those games without ever firing a bullet. The newer ones are completely different. It's all about mark your targets, do a really cool 3-shot animation, and it's much more action-oriented. So it's going to be hard to keep an audience interested with just slow movement.
Yep, there's a reason that the genre has changed so much, and it's video games, you know, in general have become much more action-packed, and that there's at least, you know, what you would call, and I hate to use this term, AAA games. Have become much more action-packed because that's what the audience wants. I mean, just about every franchise that's on the market today has to take a cue from Call of Duty if they're going to want to sell, you know, anywhere near the amount of copies that Call of Duty does. They have to take a look at the formula that they've created that sells so many games. The fact that Kojima, back at the Video Game Awards, the Spike Video Game Awards, is when they first revealed this Phantom Pain trailer. And that also was kind of, you know, the broad strokes that brought this whole thing together rather well, was that, you know, he created a lot of speculation. He created a lot of chatter on, say, like a NeoGAF forum that people were interested. They were trying to figure out what the hell this thing was about. And then when he married the two, it worked out, I would say, better than the Battlefield 4 reveal, just because of the time that they put into it in the payoff. So, next thing, Wada resigns. You know, that's kind of it's something that doesn't happen as much in the gaming industry than it does in other fields. But this guy's been with Square Enix for like 10 years. He was one of the integral parts of bringing Square and Onyx together and creating like this, you know, this new company and kind of refashioning and bringing it back to the point where it was making money. And then somewhere throughout his presidency, CEO, whatever you want to call it, somewhere in, you know, between then and now, it's just kind of all fallen apart. And the company posted like a 10 billion yen loss right before he resigned. And 10 billion yen, it turns out, is what, about
106 million dollars.
Okay.
That was way off. I thought it was like 20 bucks.
Yep. When you look at $100 million, that's a huge loss no matter what you're looking at. No matter what industry you're in, that's a significant loss. You know, him resigning after 10 years is big news. It's basically they're having their CFO, their current CFO, take over. And what I find really surprising about is that their 2012, early 2013 schedule was like some really big games, big IPs that I thought just about all of them were something to get excited about. A lot of people, critics and users, have given Sleeping Dogs great reviews. They've given Hitman Absolution great reviews, as well as the Tomb Raider reboot. The Tomb Raider reboot, I thought, was a fantastic game. I really thoroughly enjoyed playing it, but it just hasn't hit that number. It has like 2 million units to sell before it actually makes... It costs about $100 million to make.
Yeah, that's your problem right there.
Spend $100 million on a video game, that's...
Everybody's trying to make the next Call of Duty. Don't plan on sales that equal Call of Duty. That's a once in a, you know, you can try and make the next Avatar. You're still not going to sell that many tickets. Don't expect to. And if they expect to make all that money back just selling a few copies of the game, they're kidding themselves.
To be fair, Tomb Raider hasn't even been out for a month yet, or just over a month. So, I mean, it has plenty of time to recoup its sales figures. But when you look at the longer time that a game is out, the price tag drops
so much quicker than any other medium. You know, the rental's nearly gone. There's no money to be made there. People who wanted the game probably bought it, then they'll wait for the big price cut, and then how much are they really making when they're buying it on Steam for $19.99?
Sure. Yep. The video game is turning into the big movie premiere. Is where these companies are having so much trouble, is that, you know, and we've mentioned Call of Duty like three times already, but that is the biggest movie premiere ever, but it's a video game. People come out in droves to do a midnight release.
Well, you mentioned Call of Duty three times because you're a Call of Duty fanboy.
I used to be. I didn't buy the newest one, and it's because I started to see the franchise fatigue that a lot of people have seen.
It's hard to keep it up for as long as I have, though. I mean, at some point.
I got medication for that.
Yep. And to be fair, I started with Modern Warfare 2. There's a lot of people that started a lot farther back with that game that held out, you know, held the course a lot longer than I have. I've owned, what is that, Modern Warfare 2, Black Ops 2. Modern Warfare 3. That's the three Call of Duty games that I've owned. So, I mean, but my point was is that this game, it makes all of its money the midnight release. Like, it makes all of its money the first minute the game is out.
Yeah.
And then you see, you know, less adoption of DLC and stuff. That's why they started to do this, the Elite program, to try to get people to pay in for future releases. So...
I think, too, one of the things that we're seeing here by this resignation is kind of the video game industry not really being set up so far to be like the movie industry, but they kind of have to set themselves up like that. The movie industry has had, you know, 100 years to figure out, you know, what kind of budget they can put into what kind of project in order to turn a profit, and they do it pretty regularly nowadays. You know, if you think about the video game industry, it hasn't been around for very long. They probably have a ways to go, and probably a few more of these resignations as it becomes a higher profile medium that's expected to bring in a lot of money, and that they're putting more money into the projects.
Sure.
You look at something like television, which is very much in flux with people watching more TV online or just downloading, and television isn't, you know, getting the viewers and the revenue it's expected. How many different NBC execs have we seen in the last, you know, decade or so? It's a difficult time for anyone to be running a business that's in flux. And with things like free to play, with all the casual games making money, it's difficult to run a big AAA producing company, and it, you know, because the expectations are just so high.
Especially when you're spending $100 million to make a day.
That's what's been done in the past. That's what, you know, we got to be the next big thing. But really, people just want to play fun games. And it doesn't matter if one kid did it in his room and made Braid, or if it's a $100 million production.
Right.
It just has to be fun.
That's kind of part of the point, too, is a lot of these games that have become huge franchises were not the $100 million game to start off with.
Right.
It's something that's happened over time because they have a big enough audience that it's worth putting the money into it to not only appease them, but to expand into a larger audience when you already have a pretty good base. It's a lot more difficult to do something like that if you don't have that base.
Yeah. Well, and that's what I found so surprising about the Tomb Raider reboot. Tomb Raider has that base. I don't remember. I looked this up a while ago. There's like 12 Tomb Raider games before this.
There's a lot.
Or maybe more conservative, 9 or something like that.
It's dating back to PlayStation 1.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. So the fan base is there. It's truly had its ups and downs. There's people that have dropped off along the way, definitely. But the reboot, I thought, in my opinion, we had our again, our Xbox guy did a review on this, Nick. I think he gave it a 9 out of 10. I definitely would have given it a 9 out of 10 as well. It's a really good game. The it has a sandbox environment. If you're a fan of being able to go at your enemy from several different angles and surprise them in different ways, and have kind of a focused atmosphere at the same time, there were certain places that you could only access after you obtain certain tools. That's something that made me love Shadow Complex so much. I don't know how many of you guys ever played Shadow Complex, but that is a fantastic Xbox Live Arcade game. It's made by Chair Entertainment. It actually had the voice talent of Nathan Drake. Nolan North voiced the main protagonist. That was like what you call a 2.5D platformer. It had a 3D environment, but you're able to only move, you know, in a 2D plane. Yeah. And there were certain areas that it was pretty much one large map that they present you with. And you crawl across this thing like 5 or 6 times throughout your time with the game. But as you acquire more tools and stuff like that, you can get in different areas. That kind of keeps things spicy and moving along. And that's what Tomb Raider, I thought, did really well. But I digress. We got kind of far off track with that one. That's what happens when you don't limit things whatsoever. Mm-hmm. But basically, I didn't find it necessarily surprising, because I know that they've been having some troubles as of late over at Square. But they've been producing good games, so it was surprising.
Well, that's like the sexy thing to do, though, is like you repost a loss, you fire the president, you know, you shake things up.
Sexy. I mean, people love that shit.
It's what every company does, you know. You gotta change things up, and unfortunately that's what happens, even though he may be making, you know, this awesome reboot with Tomb Raider. They posted a loss, someone's gotta, you know.
Yeah.
Heads have got to roll. So.
There's a head-on chopping block nowadays when you post a loss.
It's kind of a Japanese thing, though. You think many American CEOs would sort of come out and seem willing to step down? Or they would fight tooth and nail to explain why it's someone else's fault.
Kind of die by honor, I guess, you know.
Yeah. What is that? Pukutu or Pukuku?
Seppuku?
Seppuku. Let's hope that Wada doesn't go ahead and do some seppuku here in the next few days. He's not actually going to be replaced for a while. Well, he's not going to be replaced for a while. They have a board. Yep, they have a board meeting but it's pretty much deadlocked, and hopefully he's not going to fall on a sword after he finds out for sure.
I don't think this is a sign that Square Enix is going down. I think their quality games are. It's a structuring. Yep. A budgeting. It's a lot of internal waste that they're going to have to clean up. A lot of people might lose their jobs, but I don't think the company's really anywhere.
That's like Sony. I mean, recently their stock had been downgraded to junk. Like literally, stock securities companies have downgraded their stock to junk status. But, they're still producing a new console for next generation. So that doesn't mean a whole lot. So moving along, I think one of our next large topics, we have the Activision GDC demo that Jorge Rivera, I believe it was.
Jimenez.
Thank you, Dan. He jumped on the stage. He showed a guy talking about parfaits. There was too much fruit, frozen fruit, apparently, in his parfait.
Yeah.
And he was a little pissed. He held it pretty well until they made him do the bitter beer face. And then I thought that was pretty cool. But anyways, basically, it was a really cool tech demo of a stationary video game character head talking, showing what could possibly be attainable with our next generation of consoles when it comes to facial modeling. I thought it was very impressive. I know that we've had, Scott actually brought this up earlier, that we had a 2011 demo that was very similar.
Yeah, the Janimation tech demo, where it was more or less the same thing. It was a real-time facial animation, make a sad face, make a frowny face, talk. And it was impressive then, but it isn't really that much closer to being in our games. And they're talking about how this is possible in real time with current video card technology, which is fantastic if that's the only thing you have to render. Sure. But when you're trying to do an entire scene and you're doing physics, I don't think that's really feasible for even next generation. We might be looking two or three generations down the road, because this next generation is no more powerful than 2-year-old computers,
right?
And we don't see that anywhere in PC gaming.
Sure.
For like cutscenes and stuff, I can see this happening. Well, gameplay, I mean, how realistic do you want your face in a gameplay anyway?
I mean, you look at a game like L.A. Noire, and the facial animations in that, and their ability to capture the performance of the actors was, I thought, spot on. Maybe sharpen up the graphics a bit for next generation. I don't need it that much more detailed to really be pulled into the world.
You don't really need it to look real.
No.
And it just gets kind of creepy.
There's always room for both. There's the artistic and there's the realistic.
Right. Depends on what kind of experience you're trying to portray.
Yeah, it's like if you're playing Borderlands, it's just totally...
Right. Yeah, Borderlands can be considered just as beautiful a game as Battlefield 4.
Just because it's not real.
It's just different.
Yeah. If you want to create a gritty, realistic experience, I can see where you want to see the crow's feet next to a guy's eyes.
I don't know if I ever want to see that.
Well, that's one of the things that I thought was most impressive.
Yes,
totally. Absolutely. I think it's refreshing to know that somebody at Activision is doing something.
There were times when I was looking into his eyes, I got lost in the fact it was fake and it actually looked real.
No, you were just lost in his beautiful eyes.
That's the thing. It was spot on. There was I showed this demo to my girlfriend. She doesn't give a shit about video games. She actually detests video games. But when she saw the demo, she said, "You know what? His face looks oily. He looks real.
He needs some foundation."
Well, I mean, that's one of the things that they did well enough to portray a real person.
I thought the mouth movement were a little lackluster.
They talked about how teeth and hair. Are important. And, you know, when he's talking with his mouth, part of it is you see awkward teeth and sort of a black
that
hole.
No, it wasn't that for me. It didn't really
match up.
Yeah, it didn't. To me, it didn't really look like what he was saying was what he was. Some of it did, like
when he really said the larger things in his mouth. Really,
when you really
open,
got it.
Yeah. That's the thing about any of those real time animations. They're going to need some touch up because a dot will be missed by the computer, or you know, it will miscalculate something.
Yeah.
And that's where the artists come in and they touch it up.
Yeah, I do agree with Dan too, though that. The rendering on the eyes and the, you know, the upper part of the face where you could really see the emotion that the person was portraying, that was a lot more impressive than the, you know, nose and mouth area.
Yeah, I guess emoting was pretty impressive. And you know, you think about back in 16-bit days, how do you emote? Well, you put a little exclamation mark on it.
Yeah.
Jump up and down. To be able to convey an emotion without a single word is an impressive feat.
Or you make them barf up change. That was the other, that was one of my other favorite emotion, you know, way of showing
emotions.
We can
all relate to that. We've all barfed up change.
Right. In a public setting, you know, after you get hit with a crowbar or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it was definitely cool. It would be really, really cool to see that next gen. But like you said, I mean, we got the specs of a 2-year-old PC coming next gen for consoles, that is. And if we're not able to attain this type of thing on a, you know, even a powerful high-end PC at this point, how are we going to make that happen? Seems out of reach. Last thing here, guys, we had the release of BioShock Infinite this week, which was after a very, very long development cycle, probably one of the longer development cycles that we've seen on a video game.
Duke Nukem Forever taught us anything, if you take your time, you're going to get
caught. Well, that's Gearbox for you. That was their first masterpiece, was that Duke Nukem. Their second one was Aliens Colonial Marines.
Well, another quality example of hard work put to
Yep, and four, I believe 4 years worth of development went into the
worth
Aliens.
It. Totally
yep.
worth it.
Yep. A lot of really hilarious GIFs have been made out of that game. Check them out online if you want. But
maybe we'll post some.
Yes, that would be a nice touch. But BioShock Infinite, 5 years worth of development, all accounts, we have a fantastic gold standard game on our hands. I mean, I've played the first, I'd say 2.5-3 hours of this game. It's a game that you kind of just want to walk around. And I don't... Many times nowadays, I feel myself rushing through things or wanting to, like, get to the next point and keep the story moving. This is a game that I'm willing to walk around in and, like, just check it out. And that's something that I don't... Like I said, I don't do very often. It made an impression on me.
Yeah, I'm probably 4.5 hours in, but I'm at a lower point in the game than you are, just because I'm listening to every conversation. I'm discover things and have people react to it. You know,
watch the little 8-second movies.
Yep,
I've been watching every one of those things.
Not just for achievements, but because they're actually interesting and they really flesh out the world in a way a lot of games don't do that often.
Yep.
It's not quite up to Fallout 3 level of world creation, but it's
close.
It's up there.
Yep. I believe I tweeted the night that I started this game that next to the Capital Wasteland, that this is my favorite game environment that I've ever played. And that's something Scott and I share, is Fallout 3 being pretty much the best game that we've ever played. We've talked about this prior. BioShock Infinite is starting to be right up there for me. The really fantastic thing about this is that the development team over at Irrational had a huge, like, arduous task in creating this, obviously, because the first time that we saw any type of teaser trailer for this was back in 2010. Rumors are that game had been in development for nearly 2.5 years by the time we saw the teaser trailer.
At first, when I was playing the game, I was struggling with trying to understand why I would want to kill these people, because you think about the first BioShock, it was the splicers, and they were nuts and jumping all over you, and you were defending yourself. And this one is just a bunch of people living in the air. They created the best villain since Nazis, I think. and just making them horribly racist bigots.
Right.
And it really just makes you want to go nuts and chop them up.
Why didn't we get to throw the baseball? Is what I want to know. I really wanted to throw the baseball.
It didn't seem to matter.
I don't want to spoil it too much here, guys. But there's a scene with a baseball that I really wanted to throw.
Well, not everybody knows they're not going to be able to throw it.
Well, have you seen my baseball? The setting, the characters, things like that. This is like a very disconnected society that you're stumbling onto, basically to rescue this girl that you know nothing about.
And the themes of science from the first BioShock have been replaced with religion in this
right.
one, but both are equally out of control and have, you know, warped these people's understanding of the world and even their own personalities. And while they're not as grotesque as the Splicers and physically, they sort of emotionally and mentally are equally grotesque.
Right, it's a utopia on the surface.
Yep.
Absolute utopia. I mean, it's like the first time you see the game world, you know, completely just a vista of floating buildings in front of you in the middle of the clouds. You see these, like, it makes you think of just any old, basically when you look at how people used to try to convey science and say, like, the Bhagavad Gita. When they mentioned, like, you know, aircraft or space, you know, you've heard all these things about ancient aliens, that type of thing. They always show gears moving and different portrayals of trying to convey what they saw in some rational way. That's the way that I felt when I saw BioShock Infinite for the first time. These floating buildings, there actually is gears turning beneath them to make them float. And I don't know how it works. All I know is it looks awesome. So, you know, one of the really jarring things, though, that I thought, like, when I first walked out into the game world, I think it was after about 20 minutes or so, you're in a garden, and the rose bushes that you see, they look like they're straight out of Minecraft.
Yep.
That was, like, really jarring, because there was this whole big, and I know this was CGI, I know this was, you know, pre-rendered, but the roses in the early trailer played such a big part. There was, like, roses flying everywhere and petals flying everywhere, and they all looked beautiful. But in the actual game, it looked like 8-bit, you know, flat-rendered roses. And that's, I mean, I understand. You can't render 1,000 roses in a garden expecting.
I would find it more understandable if on the PC side there was a setting buried deep inside that was the I bought $8 million PC, let me turn on my roses button. But even at the highest settings on the best computer, you're still getting that flat texture.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it just seems like they should have offered a little bit more. That being said, the game does run very well on even decent PC tech, so
sure.
that's they're going for a different approach than Crysis trying to melt your computer.
Right. They want to make it approachable at the same time as
and it is a little more, I don't want to say quite cartoony, but it's a little more colorful than a realistic rendition. So you can sort of forgive those sorts of things as
yep.
long as the rest of the world is fleshed out enough, which I think it is.
Right. They did a flip-flop with this game. They made it a lot more colorful,
mm-hmm.
and they made the problems that the population has completely different. Basically, they're not grotesque, like Scott said. It's just that they're pretty screwed up in the head, and they think that their ideals are all that matter. And but as we look at it, the game was delayed twice. There was all these huge pre-order bonuses for this game. I mean, that's what had a lot of people worried, was that, you know, buy BioShock Infinite launch day and you get the first two BioShocks and you get, you know, $15 worth of credits and all this stuff. A lot of people were worried that they were offering up all these sacrificial lambs because this game wasn't going to live up to its expectations, but I think it definitely has. I don't know.
So far?
Yep, absolutely.
Review to come.
Yep.
BioShock's never been my thing, so I don't want to put any false input in here.
Yeah.
That's all right. Just go play WoW.
I don't enjoy walking around somewhere for an hour. I'm going to get her done.
You literally just say that and you play WoW.
All right. For those kind of games.
Oh.
Yeah.
The ones with plots and
yes.
stories and characters.
I forgot.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what. I'll make a Bioshock game, and it'll let you have armor plus two every time you beat a level.
Yes, yes.
That carrot will keep you
going. And I want to get there as fast as I can, not just walk around.
Yeah, we'll make sure that we buff our gun before we shoot the next person. And I think that should make you happy. A few spells littered in will you know, help the situation quite a bit.
I've got ADD, man. I need to go.
You know, it's amazing.
Sometimes you need to stop and smell the totally flat roses, man.
It's amazing how many World of Warcraft references we're getting out of people that claim that they don't play it.
I've seen the South Park episode.
Oh, yes.
Good enough.
I've seen the South Park episode, and that filled me in.
Somebody who plays WoW, I'm going to have to say that is pretty accurate.
Yep, yep. Well, we'll have possibly five topics next week for you, or 2 weeks. Whenever we decide to do this thing again, we're
working out the kinks.
Yep, this was our pilot. So hopefully you enjoyed it. Hopefully you want to hear another one.
I don't want to push a button that would make everything go away. So somebody tell me what button they want me to press.
Press.
I will press
the non-delete button.
Go with that one. Sure.
Yeah. Older brother. I'm like 33.
Like long walks on the beach.